Welcome to the Hardball Times Audio, your weekly stop for baseball's biggest stories, past and present, with your hosts, Jen Macramos, Sarah Wexler, and Mary Craig.
As we enter the divisional series round of the playoffs, we're joined by more of your favorite writers in order to break down each series. Cleveland and Houston begin their series on Friday in Houston. Joining us to break down Cleveland's side of things is friend of the podcast and Hardball Times writer, Shakia Taylor. How are you doing today, Shake?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
We're so good, even though that AL wildcard game was terrible.
Bad.
It was like the worst it could possibly have been.
So bad. Especially considering the team who won beat my team last year.
A lot of bad blood. So, speaking of last year, as you said, Cleveland was ousted in the divisional series by the Yankees. This year's team, despite comfortably winning the AL Central, is not quite as good as last year's team. Do you think, nonetheless, they have a chance against Houston?
It's tough. I do, because hope and all that. Cleveland played in a really terrible division. I mean, they ran away with it, not because they were great, but because everyone else was so bad. I wouldn't say they were terrible against teams from other divisions, though. They were only two games under 500. But when it came to playing the Astros, they did not do so great at all. Houston pretty much dominated them. I feel like right now, though, they appear to be peaking at the right time. Things are kind of clicking. Like I said, they weren't tested in the AL Central, but they've made some adjustments that may help them in Houston. Brad Hand, Josh Donaldson, which then forces some defensive adjustments. And it pushed Jason Kipnis to the outfield. And he's had some miscues in the outfield in the past. So hopefully with him having a little more time out there to get adjusted, he'll be good to go. I really hope they can hang with Houston. I think the pitching will be key. Because Cleveland's pitchers are good. They're real good. And their hitters are hard to strike out. So I feel like that combination could help them against Houston.
Yeah, I think they definitely have a fighting chance. And, you know, even if it didn't go so well in the regular season, that all goes away in the postseason and doesn't necessarily mean anything. So I think that's definitely not something you need to put too much stock into. So you touched on some of the key players for Cleveland down the stretch. Who do you think, can you think of three players that could have a performance that could be the deciding factor in the series?
I absolutely can. I probably could give you a couple more, honestly. So Cody Allen, what the hell? Like, that is literally what I wrote when I was preparing notes for this conversation. What period, the period hell. I don't know if he lost his stuff, if, you know, sometimes pitchers get in their heads, but he was real unreliable for a little bit, so much so that he lost his spot. But I'm hoping with the addition of Bauer, and Bieber to the bullpen for this series, that they may be a little more stable. Another player who I think has been quietly consistent is Michael Brantley. You know, he's dealt with some injuries in the past, but this year he's been pretty good. He has the highest batting average among the starters on the team. He's at 309. That's really good. That's really good. I always joke that baseball is the only job you can have that if you do it well for a quarter of the time, you're good. So he's doing better than 25%, which is great. And I think he can make waves offensively just because I feel like he's kind of flying under the radar with such a high batting average. And then the obvious answer for my third would be either Lindor or Ramirez, but I'm going with Encarnacion. He's been injured. I feel like he has a slump every season. Like, every season, he has, like, a month where he just cannot produce. Hoping with his return to the lineup, we see that parrot pretty frequently. With him and Frankie and the best Jose, I'm really hoping that they can, like, get something going. Because the pitching is there. The starting pitching is there. You have Kluber, you have Cookie, you have Clevinger. If you say that three times in a row, you turn into me. And those guys are great. Well, Corey, let's hope he doesn't have one of his meltdowns, but I'm hopeful. So I think with the pitching, and if those other guys who I just mentioned, Allen, Brantley, and Encarnacion, I think those are difference makers right there.
Yeah, I think you're right that Cleveland definitely has all of the pieces that it needs in order to make this at least a competitive series, if not outright win the series. So do you have any predictions for things that will happen in this series in terms of both, you know, individual events by the players and the final outcome?
Well, so a prediction that's probably not a good one for me to make, considering how much I love his team, is that I don't think all of the hitters will be hitting well at the same time. Do you know what I'm saying? I feel like you may have a particular part of the order that's a little shaky. So I'm definitely predicting that. I am not thinking they're going to run away with this, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be a short one. You know, I feel like it's definitely going to go longer than three. If Cleveland can win in Houston, that changes the game. If they can win one in Houston, that changes everything for me. I think they stand a chance. I think they have a fighting chance. That's not just Shakia who grew up watching them. That's Shakia, the person who just really enjoys baseball. They have a fighting chance. It's interesting because the playoffs, I believe in all sports, everybody goes 0-0. Your record's gone. You're starting over. You know, there's a chance to come out and make a strong statement. And the window for Cleveland is really interesting. They've got most of their guys until, like, what is it, 2020, 2022 even? But it's time. It's kind of like do or die. It has to happen soon. Not just for my own personal sanity, but because guys will start moving around, you know? It's not exactly, you know, a city that people are like, yeah, I'm going to go move to Cleveland. I'm going to go play in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So small market team, I'm hopeful. My prediction is I will lose my mind, but also that I think they will put up a fight, a good fight. And going forward, I'd really like them to come out of that series. If they can get out of the series against the Astros, who I think probably stands to be their toughest obstacle, they could do something.
Yeah, if you can get over that hurdle, that is huge. And, you know, I obviously whoever you're going to face coming out of the other DS is not going to be easy, but still a big, big thing to be able to get past the Astros, who, you know, they're the defending champs. They're a really, really good team.
And it's interesting that they're favored to win again. Back-to-back champions, you know, doesn't really happen too often in baseball. This isn't basketball, you know, where it's top-heavy. And baseball is so random. That's the other thing. I really need that randomness to just swing Cleveland's way one time.
Is there a particular Cleveland player that you think will be the random player to just come up and hit that home run or come out of the bullpen and pitch that, you know, 1-2-3 scoreless inning to clinch things?
Oh, okay. I feel like Shane Bieber from the pitching side is going to be important, right? Like, just because he's been good, but then like, oh, Shane, what are you doing? But then he's been good and you forget the, oh, Shane, what are you doing? And I think because the other guys, you just expect it from them now, right? You have four guys with 200 strikeouts. You expect them to be good. Bieber is moving from starting to the bullpen, which I think is super important. And I think he'll make a massive impact. He might save a game. He might be the guy. As from a hitting standpoint, I'm not really sure. I mean, you had Greg Allen hitting walk-offs, which blows my mind still. So I don't know. I feel like hitting, they've got that pretty consistently. I don't think there'll really be too many surprises there.
All right. So you can follow Shake on Twitter at @CurlyFro. thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. And we're all rooting for a 5-game series as well, full of close games, with eventually Cleveland coming out on top.
For the Houston side of things, here is our very own Jen Mac Ramos, who spent several years evaluating the team's core in the minor leagues. Thanks so much for being with us today, Jen.
Wouldn't imagine any other place to be during the recording of this podcast.
Well, the Astros did a great deal to solidify their pitching staff in the second half of the season. How much of Houston's success in the playoffs is dependent on the rotation and bullpen performing as they did during the regular season?
Well, I mean, just looking at how well this, you know, this starting rotation has been this season. I mean, Justin Verlander, he has an ERA of 2.52, but his deserved run average is below that at 2.33. And he's worth a WARP of 7.34. Like, that's pretty big. And then you have the next guy down on the list, Gerrit Cole, who they acquired from the Pirates. Like, all right, sure, ERA 2.88, but DRA of 2.55 and a WARP of 6.37. So, you know, it's just like, they're good. And then you have Dallas Keuchel and Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers. And, like, they all have DRAs in the threes. And they are worth at least 2 to 3 WARP. And the fact that you have such a valuable pitching staff, well, at least just the starting rotation, is huge because it keeps the team in the game. And the bullpen as well, you know, it's very rare to find someone in the Astros bullpen that has a DRA above 3, you know. There's Joe Smith, who has a DRA of, like, 4.49, but his ERA is below 4. So it balances everything out. And then, you know, you've got Brad Peacock, who has just been almost exceptional if you're looking at DRA. They have managed to figure out what the bullpen needs and what the needs are and how to find players that fit that situation. So the way that they've been able to, you know, go about everything, especially with American League having the designated hitter and being more hitter friendly, you know, the key obviously was to build a good pitching staff, and the Astros have managed to, like, find a way to get there.
So you threw around a ton of names. Choose 3 now, any 3, for Houston, whose performance could prove to be the deciding factor in the series.
All right, so I feel like Alex Bregman is going to be huge for them. He's been worth nearly 8 WARP this year, and, I mean, sure, average is below 300, but, like, that ISO of 246, pretty good. Like, he's going to be able to hit a couple dingers, at least a couple dingers in the postseason, unless things go horribly, horribly wrong. I think that obviously Verlander and Cole, for reasons that I mentioned, that they're two of the most valuable players on the team, they're going to have a very big impact on the way the series goes against Cleveland. So I think it would probably be the 3 of them, Bregman, Verlander, and Cole, because pitching is going to be important in this series. And if the pitching can hold it down, then the rest of the team can hold it down.
Okay, so do you have any predictions for this series? What do you think the final outcome is going to be? Who do you think is going to be a player with a key moment, that sort of thing?
I don't know if it's going to be, like, a super hard series for either Cleveland or Houston. I feel like it'll probably be decided in either a sweep or 4 games, but which side it would go to just depends on how well things work out for each team in the first game. I think the first game would probably be the most crucial in terms of deciding the tone for the rest of the series. That's not to say that it can turn around at any moment, because that's how baseball is. But I think that, you know, the Astros do have a slight advantage there, especially playing, you know, in a very hard-fought AL West. And then Cleveland, you know, they had the advantage of being in the AL Central, but that's not to discredit how good of a team they are. But, you know, the Astros had some work to do to get to the postseason.
Okay, well, turning now to the other ALDS matchup, with the conclusion of the wildcard game, we now know it'll be the Red Sox against the Yankees. Discussing the Red Sox is our very own Mary Craig. Hey, Mary.
Hey. Happy to be here.
Well, it's Red Sox. It's Yankees Red Sox once again. How do you feel about this matchup in general and specifically this time around?
I mean, I don't think anybody is particularly thrilled with this matchup, whether that be Red Sox fans, Yankees fans, or the rest of baseball. I think that it went really well for the Red Sox the last time these two teams met in the playoffs 14 years ago. But that was also an incredibly close series. And I think, again, anything could happen in the series. These two teams are just so evenly matched that the 10-game difference between the two in the regular season, or the 8-game difference, rather, I think is very deceptive. The Red Sox, I don't think, are 8 games better than the Yankees. It just seemed like the Yankees couldn't win as much against terrible teams, whereas they were really good against upper echelon teams, especially the other teams in the playoffs. So anything could happen, and I am dreading it.
I didn't realize it was 14 years since they last met each other in the postseason. Wow.
It's been a long time, and yet not long enough.
Seems like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there are a lot of big names on this Red Sox team. Who do you think are 3 players that could end up being deciding factors in the series?
First, I'll go with David Price. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball in the second half of the season, but he has, of course, the narrative surrounding him that he cannot pitch well in the playoffs or against the Yankees. This season, he's had 4 starts against the Yankees, and I think he went a combined 15.2 innings in them, which is not what you want. So I think that he will certainly have to do well against the Yankees this time around. Of course, I think he's set up to face Tanaka in Game 2, who is notoriously bad against the Red Sox. So David Price, I think, needs to pitch well overall, but there is a little bit of wiggle room for him if Tanaka pitches how he generally does against the Red Sox. But definitely there are a lot of expectations set on David Price, and it could be very bad for him if he has another bad game in the playoffs and a bad game against the Yankees specifically. Secondly, I'll go with Joe Kelly. He has not performed up to expectations this season. He has been specifically terrible in September, although he did have 2 scoreless outings in the final week of the season, so he ended on a little bit of a positive. I think he needs to keep that going in the playoffs, otherwise it could be very bad for the Red Sox. I think they need a lot of stability in the bullpen, a lot of guys that they can call on for a variety of situations, because I foresee this being a series that depends on its pitchers, that has games that are quite long with starters pulled fairly early on. So I think the bullpen needs to be as strong as it can possibly be. And now I will switch to the batting side of the game. And for my third choice, I'll go with Xander Bogaerts. He in his career hasn't done terribly well against the Yankees, but he obviously had a pretty good season. And if he can hit like he has this season, like he has in September against the Yankees, then the Red Sox should have a pretty solid lineup, because obviously I think that Mookie Betts and JD Martinez are going to continue what they did in the regular season. But I think they're going to need more than just those two guys to hit. So if Xander Bogaerts could step up as he has done recently, then the Red Sox have a pretty good lineup, at least the upper half of it.
Do you have any predictions for the series in terms of final outcomes and events?
I think that there are only 2 things that you can count on happening in this series, because I think anything is possible. But the games will be very long, and there will be dingers hit. I think at some point you're going to see Chapman give up a home run, because the Red Sox love to hit against him, and that's just been the norm whenever they face Chapman. So I think you can pretty much guarantee that. But outside of that, who really knows? As for an overall series prediction, it's going to go 5 games. These teams are just so close. I would like to think that the Red Sox can eke out a win, but I mean, who knows? I don't think anybody is willing to put that much money up on either team in this series.
So what you're saying is that everyone's going to die.
I mean, as is the norm with these teams, whenever they play each other, it's going to be bad.
I'm going to be playing till like 3 a.m. local time.
Yeah, I'm going to just be a wreck. It'll be great.
We'll keep an eye on you.
I appreciate it. Now, on the New York side of things, back with us is Yankees expert and BP Bronx editor-in-chief, Stacey Gatsoulias. I imagine you're doing quite well today, Stacey.
I am, yes. A little tired, though. You know, the game ended kind of late, and post-game was on until almost 2 a.m, so yeah, I'm a little tired.
At least this one didn't go 13 innings.
True. Although it felt like it did.
Yeah. as we've mentioned, you're matching up against the Red Sox, and the Yankees have matched up pretty well against them this year. Season series ended 10-9 in favor of the Red Sox, so, you know, that's about as close as you can get without tying. And do you think this series is going to match that sort of closeness?
I think it should, because this reminds me of 2003 when the Yankees were 10-9 against the Sox, and they were just matched up in every single way really closely, and that series went 7. So I would expect a 5-game series between them. I mean, you never know, because the playoffs are such a crapshoot. Like, a really good team could have a bad couple of days and they're gone. But I could see it going the full 5.
Who are 3 players who could be the deciding factor in the series?
Okay. Masahiro Tanaka is one of them, because he has not been great against the Red Sox this year. He had one good start, and I say it that way because he only lasted 4 2/3, and he held them to 1 run, but the Yankees still ended up losing the game. So if he could come out and not poop the bed against the Red Sox, that would be a good boost for the Yankees. The second player is Gary Sanchez. He's had a really rough year, both in front of the plate and behind it. He finished with the worst batting average of any Yankee ever, with at least 300 at bats. So it'd be really good for him and his confidence if he could step up in a way. Although, you know, last night he struggled a bit at the plate, but he looked solid behind it. There were a few balls that Severino threw and Tantas threw that could have gone through his legs. He could have missed completely and he didn't. He also called a great game. So if he can somehow get going, I mean, even with one hit, he would be another big boost for the Yankees. And Severino, you know, he did well last night, although, you know, 87 pitches after 4 isn't great, but he held the A's to no runs. He kept them off the bases for the most part. He ran into some trouble there at the end. And if he can have a start where he show some length and maybe lasts until the 5th or 6th inning, and the Yankees don't have to rely on the bullpen to save his rear end, that would be huge for the Yankees as well, because he's their ace and he needs to pitch like he's their ace again.
So do you have any predictions for the series in terms of final outcome as well as events?
Like I said earlier, I think it's probably going the full 5. I don't see one team dominating the series, but again, who knows? As to who's winning, I have no idea. As I said in my last appearance, I'm really bad at predictions like that. I mean, obviously, you know who I'd like to win, but it's a series between a 108-win team and a 100-win team. And even though there's those 8 games, you know, there are games the Yankees should have won against, like, the Orioles this season. So the Yankees could have also been as good as the Red Sox if they didn't make some really stupid mistakes. So there's not really a huge gap between the two teams. So I think we'll all get our money's worth over these next 5 games. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining the series being anything less than dramatic, because it's the Red Sox and Yankees. Stuff always happens when those two teams meet each other. All right. Well, you can follow Stacy on Twitter at @StaceScots. Thanks for joining us again, Stacy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Let's move on now to the National League. In the A bracket, it's the Milwaukee Brewers versus the wild card winners, the Colorado Rockies. Here to talk Milwaukee with us is Brewers beat writer for The Athletic, Kat Garcia.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, it came down to 163 games, but the Brewers took the NL Central for the first time since 2011. How did they manage to pull the upset and unseat the Cubs?
I think for the Cubs, it was more that they were just going through a really tough stretch. I think they scored, it was like 3 runs in 22 innings or something like that. That's not to discount what the Brewers have been doing, but it definitely was kind of an easy win for them with that 163. But you also can't discount Elias Chassin's start that day. He was absolutely brilliant, and then the bullpen came and picked him up. It was just a great, great example of what this team has done all season. They've had really strong contributions from the starters, and then the bullpen comes in and just finishes everything off.
So, as you mentioned, it's really been an entire team contribution to get the Brewers to this point. But who are three players who could be the deciding factor in the series for the Brewers?
Well, I think obviously, you know, the first person you have to point to is going to be Josh Hader. He's been absolutely outstanding all year. And the Craig Council announced yesterday that game one would be a bullpen day, which obviously you realize that Hader's probably going to pick up a few significant innings with that. I think the rest of the lane, you really have to look at, obviously, Christian Yelich also, whose, you know, contributions have been recognized throughout baseball. And this feels so like, you know, the typical people that you would pick, but they are really truly the guys that have helped this team get where they are. And I think a third one is going to be Jeremy Jeffress. And if you want to add a B to that, Corey Knebel, because, you know, their contributions in game 163, I think, are going to carry forward into the rest of this series.
Do you have any predictions for the series in terms of final outcome events?
I think that the Rockies are a really good team and they're on a pretty good hot streak right now. So I think this is definitely going to be a series that's, going to go the distance. I think we'll see it probably end in 5 games. And I think you would expect to see Freddie Peralta somewhere in there for the Brewers. The way that Council was speaking yesterday, saying that he was going to use guys that weren't particularly their starters all the time, which kind of alluded to the fact that there were other arms in the pen that maybe haven't been used as relievers. But, you know, all signs kind of pointed to Freddie Peralta with that comment in my mind. So I think somewhere during the series, you should expect to see him.
All right. Well, you can follow Kat on Twitter at @TheBaseballGirl, and you can follow her coverage at The Athletic. Thanks, Kat. Appreciate you joining us.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me.
On the Rocky side of things, we have, once again, our own Jack Mac Ramos. As you all know, Jen is formerly a writer for Purple Row and has extensive experience covering Rockies prospects in the Cal League.
Well, Jen, the Rockies had to play 3 games in 3 different time zones in 3 days to get where they are, but they're here now in a division series for the first time since 2009. What got the Rockies to this point, and how will that play in the division series? And also, can we talk about the hug?
Yes.
This is not something that people would expect from the Colorado Rockies, especially playing at Coors, but their pitching has actually been a lot more exceptional than most people would assume. Just looking through the deserved run averages of members of their pitching staff, I mean, on the starting pitcher point, like Kyle Freeland, who is, you know, this year's ace for them, has a DRA of 3.89. And then Adam Ottavino coming out of the bullpen has a DRA of 3.02. They just have a very, very, very stronger than average pitching staff. So they've been able to at least keep the offense in the game. And of course, the offense in itself, like Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story and Charlie Blackmon, it's like, everything is just working right for them. And I think that's also the case of the wild card game against the Cubs. They were able to hold it down, even though the Cubs tied it up in the bottom of the eighth You know, they were able to hold on, and, you know, Tony freaking Walters, he of only 31 hits in the regular season. Granted, he only had, well, actually not only, but he had 216 plate appearances. So, you know, people who are not expected to be the ones to get the crucial hit are stepping up for the Rockies. And I think that is one of the things that led them to get to the DS this year. I think that will play out in a very, very hard-fought series against the Brewers. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to see now that this Rockies team is, you know, getting close to very for real. Like, they're, you know, since last year's appearance in the wildcard game, they have just been building up and up and up. And, you know, the Rockies strategy with developing pitchers is a lot different than they've approached in years past, such as like signing affiliation with minor league teams that are in high altitude so pitchers can get used to it early on. They have Grand Junction, they have Lancaster, they have Albuquerque. They are trying to develop these players as early as possible to be prepared for the environment at Coors. And I think that is something that they're going to take with them through the DS. And that's something that a lot of people will be seeing on a national level for the first time. And the hug. I just enjoy that Nolan Arenado said he was kind of squirmy.
That's about what I would expect from a hug from Javi Baez. I would expect him to be kind of squirmy.
Yeah, yeah, he seems like a squirmy guy who's always on the move. So, you mentioned the word crucial. Who are three players who are crucial to the Rockies and could be the deciding factor in the series?
So, I feel like the obvious answers would be like Nolan Arenado, Charlie Blackmon, Kyle Freeland. But I think there are going to be, like, not necessarily like the epitome of deciding factor, but there's going to be a lot of the younger players who are still kind of trying to find their place in the roster and contributing a bit as well. I have not checked yet to see if the Rockies have their roster announced, but I would imagine that some of the younger guys, like, you know, if they make it onto to the roster, like David Dahl or Garrett Hampson or Ryan McMahon, you know, they're probably going to be able to find ways to contribute that, you know, most people wouldn't expect because they don't know. They might not know who exactly they are, period. So we're going to see a lot of new faces and names stepping up to help the team in the DS. But if we're going to just go with like the surefire, foolproof names would probably be Arenado, Blackmon, and Freeland.
Yeah, I think it seems like a pretty good bet those guys are going to be pretty heavily involved. So as for the series itself, do you have any predictions for what we might see in terms of the final outcome and specific events?
Aside from my death in front of a computer, I would probably just say I would probably expect it to go 5 games. That is my prediction. I honestly, these two teams have gone above and beyond expectations that there is no way to really predict this series, especially with, you know, the Brewers upsetting the Cubs and then the Rockies upsetting the Cubs. This series is the epitome of the classic phrase, you can't predict baseball. And honestly, the only thing I can think of is, in terms of final outcome and events, other than, you know, again, my yelling and death on my computer, but it's just going to be a very hard-fought series. I don't know if it's going to be like extremely high-scoring games or lopsided games, but just a lot of good baseball.
Yeah, plus we're going to get playoff baseball at Coors Field, so that'll be a thing.
Anything could happen.
Yes.
Anything literally can happen.
So now let's look over to the NLDSB between the Dodgers and the Braves. Here to cover the Dodgers is one Sarah Wexler.
So, Sarah, tell me, in what ways do the Dodgers match up well against Atlanta?
So these are obviously two very good teams because, you know, they're two teams in the postseason. Of course, they're both very good.
What?
I know. It's weird. I mean, sometimes a bad one sneaks in there, but in this case, they're both good. So how about that? but yeah, they stack up closely to each other in a number of ways. I'd say that the Dodgers have the edge in a lot of categories. They had the edge when it comes to both starting and relief pitching. But, you know, no matter how good your pitching is, you still have to contend with a really good young Braves lineup. When it comes to offense, again, Dodgers have a slight edge. I don't think it's quite as pronounced as with the pitching. But, again, it's a short series, so anything can happen. In terms of the rotations, the Braves have an all right-handed rotation, which is going to play in the Dodgers' favor, except for the fact that the Dodgers have a lefty-heavy rotation, and that is something that works well for the Braves. So that might actually end up kind of balancing out. Hard to say for sure, but it's you have to think both teams are going to be pretty happy with that. And then I guess the other thing that you have here is you have kind of a more veteran-focused team in the Dodgers versus a more youthful team in the Braves. That's going to be interesting to watch unfold. It's always kind of a fun to see contrasts like that. I'm not one of those people who thinks, oh, yes, veteran presence is absolutely necessary for a team to succeed. But, you know, you obviously do have guys who've been here before, more so than with the Braves. And it could or could not matter. It's just a fact. But yeah, we'll see kind of what that ends up meaning, if anything, in the series.
So who are three players who could be the deciding factor in this series?
Okay, so first one I'm going to go with is Walker Buehler. He's a rookie, and he so far has seemed to handle pressure really well. But even counting game 163, he hasn't really had pressure like this. So It'll be a test for him for sure. He was fantastic in game 163, and he's the reason why the Dodgers are here and didn't have to go through a wild card game to get there. But this is going to be something new for him. So he's probably going in game 3 of this series. And obviously they'll need him down the stretch as well if they make it to the next round. So I think he'll be an important factor when it comes to these games. Second guy I'm going to go with is Kenley Jansen. He had a very good season, but I'm not sure he ever got fully right after he had the heart issues in Denver. He allowed 2 homers in that game 163, and he allowed 13 home runs this season, which is more than double his previous career high. So that's kind of a new concern that we have with Kenley that we're not really used to having. And the Dodgers are really going to need him to be something close to what we think of as himself in order to lock down what are probably going to be some close games. So, Kenley being effective is going to be a big thing that the Dodgers are looking for. And for a non-pitcher choice, I'm going to go with Justin Turner because I feel like with him, where his bat goes, the rest of the lineup goes. And when he's hot, he can be a real leader and a real instigator for this Dodger lineup.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a good selection of the three. So do you have any predictions either involving these three or the other players for the series in terms of both final outcome and specific events?
Okay, so outside of these three, I'm going to say Max Muncy is going to hit some dingers. he hit one in game 163, and that, I guess you could say that was the deciding, those were the deciding runs. And I think he really enjoys getting the chance to show off what he can do. And I think we're going to see some of that from him because, you know, it's totally improbable that Max Muncy is doing this even at this point. So why wouldn't he continue doing it? And then I think Hyunjin Ryu is going to shove. It's kind of an unexpected thing that he was put in to be the game one starter. You know, we're so used to just it being an automatic that Kershaw is going to go in game one of a playoff series for the Dodgers, or at least, you know, for the first round. But in this case, they decided to change things up a bit. And I am actually totally comfortable with it. Ryu had a fantastic season for the time that he was healthy and did the year with a sub-2 ERA, which overperformed his FIP of 3, but that's still quite good, especially considering that, you know, we thought Hyunjin Ryu might never pitch again in the majors, and yet here he is being good. And it's been really fun to watch that resurgence, because he's a guy who's really fun to watch, and he's a guy that's really easy to root for. And I think we're going to see some more of that resurgence going forward, because, you know, this guy closed out his season by allowing just one run in his final three starts across 19 innings, and you can't really have a much better playoff tune-up than that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Ryu can bring to the table. And as for the final outcome of the series, I don't think it's going to be a sweep either way, just because, well, first of all, that's boring. Nobody wants that. Even, I mean, obviously you want it for your team, but I recognize for the greater good of baseball, it shouldn't be a sweep. That said, I'm going to take the Dodgers in 4.
Ooh.
Yeah, that may be overly confident, but I think they can pull it off.
I feel like sweeps should not be allowed in postseason baseball, but that's just a personal opinion.
Personally, I like sweeps, especially when they happen in the World Series. No bias.
Really now? Really?
Finally, here to discuss the Atlanta Braves with us is Braves season ticket holder and Talking Shop contributor Stacy Marlowe. How are you doing today, Stacy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Right, so the NL East was one of the weakest divisions this season. Do you think that winning such a comparatively easy division puts Atlanta at any sort of disadvantage in the playoffs?
I have heard a lot of people say that we probably don't have a chance, especially playing the Dodgers. But really, looking at the team on an individual basis, we really exceeded expectations this year. We were projected to win, I believe, 72 games, and we ended up with 90 wins. So, honestly, I don't think we're at a disadvantage, but I do think we do have a tough road ahead playing the Dodgers.
So, what were some of the main factors that made the Braves win so many more games than what they were predicted to win? And do you think these factors, these same players, could be a factor in this series?
Definitely. I think that this season really, for Braves fans, signaled an end to the rebuild. We've been in the rebuild for 4 years, and this is the year that they told us, well, we're going to be bringing up all of our young players. We have a long list of young pitchers ready to come up and make a difference on the team. So one by one, we had obviously Acuna, Albies, Kyle Wright, we had Touki Toussaint. So all of these players came up and made big impacts on the team. So I think they're going to be one of the keys for the postseason, making sure that they stay calm and stay settled and just play the game like we've been doing for the whole year.
Do you have 3 players in particular that you think will have a huge impact on the way the series turns out?
Thinking about this question, I really could make a case for all of them, but Mike Foltynewicz was chosen to be our starter for tonight for game one. I think that tonight is really important for him to go deep in the game, have a good start, not get rattled easily, try to keep the ball in the ballpark. So how Folty does tonight could have a big impact on the series. I also think that as far as our bullpen goes, Vizcaino has come back up from injury, and he is going to need to make a big impact on the bullpen as our closer. Minter was our closer for the time that he was away and had some struggles. So closing out the game, that's a big deal. And then third player would be Charlie Culverson. He played in the playoffs last year for the Dodgers and has been huge for us this year, coming off the bench. But Dansby Swanson was hurt just in the very last week of the season. He has a hand injury. So Charlie is going to need to step up at shortstop, and hopefully his defense can carry us through. And so those are my three players. Like I said, I can make a case for a lot of them, Acuna, Albies, but those are three really important players for this series.
I think that's a pretty good selection. It covers, I think, most of the crucial elements of the game. And it seems like the Braves are going to need to do everything well in order to beat the Dodgers.
Right.
So do you have any predictions for the series? It seems like both of the teams are incredibly fun teams to watch with a lot of young players.
I, being the optimistic fan that I am, I'm going to say Braves will pull it off in five games, but it's not going to be easy. We have 2013 kind of looming over our heads. We were knocked out in the first round against the Dodgers back in 2013. It didn't go so well. I think it's crucial that we win game one, or at least win one game in LA. If not, if we come home with two losses, it's going to be almost impossible to pull ourselves out of that. But we had more wins on the road, so I actually was okay with us not having home field advantage. I'm hoping that we had days off, they're prepared, and under Folty tonight, we can get some hits and, like I said, keep the ball in the yard. We don't want them getting – they have power all up and down their lineup. So I'm optimistic. I'm really hoping that we can pull this series off.
I think you definitely have a good shot. I think it's going to be a good matchup for both of the teams.
Yes.
And hopefully, as a fan who has no rooting interest in either of the teams, it is five straight games of a very close play.
Yes, I agree. It's hopefully it's not like the wild card game was last night. I don't want it to be a blowout. But I do think that they're going to go in there and fight as hard as they can. Even if it ends up not being what Braves fans hope for, you know, everyone keeps saying, oh, well, we're ahead of schedule. Well, that's great and everything, but we've gotten ourselves to the playoffs, and I really want to be competitive.
I think you have a good chance of being competitive. I think really anybody can come out of the National League. I wouldn't be surprised who ends up in the World Series.
Yes, I agree. It's going to be a wild ride.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You can follow Stacey on Twitter at @SLMSolo.
Thank you very much for having me.
Anytime.
And now for this week in baseball history.
On October 3rd, 1909, Ty Cobb becomes the first player in baseball history to win the Triple Crown with a .377 average, 107 RBIs, and 9 home runs.
I don't think we'll see that combination anytime soon again.
Yeah, that's a it's an interesting line right there.
October 6th, 1923, Braves shortstop Ernie Padgett completes the NL's first recorded unassisted triple play.
And on October 7th, 1969, the Cardinals trade Tim McCarver, Byron Brown, Joe Horner, and Curt Flood to the Philadelphia Phillies in exchange for Dick Allen, Jerry Johnson, and Cookie Roja, sparking Flood's Supreme Court challenge of MLB's reserve clause, which, as we all know, would initiate free agency for the first time in MLB's history. Good job, Curt Flood. You're a baseball hero.
We salute you, Curt Flood. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Hardball Times audio. You can find the Hardball Times at fangraphs.com/THT and on Twitter at @Hardball_Times. I can be found on Twitter at Jen Mac Ramos. You can find Sarah at Sarah Wexler 32. You can find Mary at Mary M. Craig. You can find the podcast on Twitter at THT Audio. Thanks to our theme music from bensound.com. You can find all the episodes of the Hardball Times Audio on iTunes. Please rate and subscribe. Be sure to tune in after the Division series for another episode.